Professor Leroy from the University of Illinois. Is this your favorite job, Professor Leroy? All things University of Illinois?
I love the university and my job, but I have to say you're my favorite radio host, John.
Well, I'll take that. That's the price you pay to get to come on the air with me. That's what I charge all the guests, and I appreciate your time. Hey, you know, not often, the word labor comes up so much because it's Labor Day weekend, and that's exactly what you study. And it's probably good for all of us to take stock every year or so in the movements that have been made by the labor movement, huh?
It is good. First of all, most of us between the ages of 18 and 64 spend most of our waking hours in a job of some kind, doing work. And so it is a good idea to stand back and take a look at trends and see how they affect our economy, but also how they touch our work life.
And this past year, particularly, labor, a year and a half or so, labor has really come into focus as we've seen a rise in people, whether it's Starbucks, try to unionize. We've had a near strike with the railroads, one that didn't get quite as close, but UPS with a giant new contract. We're in the midst of strikes in Hollywood, a potential strike looming in Detroit and in the United Auto Workers. So labor has been at the forefront in the news, too, this past year.
It has. And I have to say, among the small group of academics who are called labor experts, most of us, myself included, didn't see this activism coming, not at least in its current form. So I think it's taken a lot of us by surprise. It is robust. It seems to have at least intermediate legs, if not long-term legs. And it seems to be making a real difference in terms of the wages and benefits that workers are recovering back from really 3 decades or 4 decades of giving back to corporations.
Well, I think we'll give you the pass on this one, Professor Leroy, because I don't think anyone saw COVID coming. And I've got to say, whether it's people reevaluating how they work and their work-life balance, or simply the fact that labor became so tight after COVID that workers had more power, I really think that, and you tell me if I'm wrong or right or onto something, that COVID-19 and the effects of it have really changed the game.
Yeah, I have a colleague who's a labor economist, and she looks at statistical data. It really backs up your point very convincingly that we went through this great resignation where tens of millions of people dropped out of the labor force. It's hard to figure out if it's long-term or short-term. But there's sort of an existential moment that people are having where they're saying, why did I work 6 days a week, and what did I get in return? And where's my life now, whether I'm 30, 40, 60, whatever our age bracket? So I think there's a reckoning, and I do think it filters into some of these labor disputes.
Yeah, well, let's talk about one that is currently ongoing, and that's what's going on in Hollywood. And you texted me before the show. You know, we've talked about writers, and we've talked about actors. There's a new wrinkle in this case, huh?
There's a new wrinkle with the union, the Actors Guild, short term is SAG. They are authorizing, or they're seeking from their membership authority to go on strike. Now, that looks strange. What does a video game have to do with SAG? And the answer is they represent major segments of the video game voice and acting market. And they have real concerns and real issues. So they have a labor agreement. They already have that. But the long story short is, similar to the actor strike that many of us are following in the news, they want more pay. They're concerned about residuals. They're concerned about artificial intelligence being substituted for acting. And, John, they're also concerned, and this was a revelation to me, they do crazy stunts where actors get hurt. And so they want to have more controls in their labor agreement over stunts. And they also, I didn't realize that vocal artists have voice health issues from being overused. It's an industry that is like an old sweatshop in terms of 70, 80-hour work weeks, very tough working conditions, very tight deadlines, in some senses a toxic culture. So, you know, bats on the horizon. So for those of us who are gamers, you know, it's something that we may want to pay attention to.
I just want to really make sure I understand. Stunts? Is this like actors who maybe wear all the equipment so that CGI can capture the stunt that they do and that gets translated into a video game, those movements? Is that the stunts in video games? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
At least that's exactly what I'm reading about this. You know, one of the challenges in this new period is You know, I've looked at steel and auto and coal and traditional, and then I've moved into sports and entertainment. But video games, it's new for me. And, John, one of the most fun things that we did in the past week in a class here at the university was we talked about social influencers. So SAG is also telling people on TikTok who advertise, they give movie reviews. And I never realized that they also, a segment of them, are represented by SAG. Mm. But SAG has said, hey, no more talking on your TikTok account about movies. And in effect, SAG has set up a virtual picket line. So in class, we talked about what is a virtual picket line and how do you enforce that? So these are a lot of new elements, and they speak to what you said at the top of our conversation, which is there's a lot of churn. There's a lot of new things that are, you know, making their way into what we call now labor disputes.
I find it interesting, and you mentioned SAG-AFTRA, and just to, again, to get people, these are actors, these are also voice actors, but SAG-AFTRA represents a lot of people, including a lot of people in the broadcasting world. Now, that portion of SAG is not on strike. We have a labor agreement. I'm not part of it now, but a lot of my colleagues are. They are not on strike. They have labor agreements. And you're saying the video game people, they have an agreement too, so are they allowed to go on strike even if they're under a current agreement?
It's either expired or expiring.
It's coming really up. Good. Okay.
Yeah. No, and so in that sense, it's like what you said at the top of the hour. It's like the UPS situation, the railroad workers. No, we call a strike in the middle of the contract a wildcat. It's not authorized. But no, this is sort of the end of bargaining. And just to add one more quick layer to it, a major employer in this business is now Microsoft. They have acquired Activision. So in some sense, you have a powerful union. And you know, as we tell our students, unions try to be monopolies in their own labor market against a quasi-monopoly. You know, Microsoft is about as big as they come. So it's strength on strength. And so we'll see what comes out of it.
I wanted to shift gears to the UAW, pun not intended, but I'll take it. It was accidental. The UAW, United Auto Workers, say on Thursday that they filed an unfair labor practice charge with the National Labor Relations Board against GM and Chrysler parent Stellantis, saying they have refused to bargain in good faith. This seems like really bad news in the negotiation, or is this a common step towards what could eventually be an agreement, but we won't know yet?
John, I haven't read the complaint, but I'm not surprised. There's an element of posturing, and it goes both ways. You know, they will have an agreement. Whether there's a strike before the agreement or not, we don't know. But typically, those complaints get withdrawn. But it also creates some sensitivity, whatever their issue is. A typical current issue that unions have with employers is the employer is going around the union and messaging bargaining proposals, like at the plant level or through the HR office. And so the union will say, we're supposed to control the communication to our membership, not you guys. So it could be that. I'm speculating, but that has surfaced in recent kinds of labor disputes.
Well, we'll keep an eye on this one because that could be a big one, and we'll for sure get you on the line when we get a little bit closer to that deadline, either on this show or on Your Money Matters. I do want to pivot, though, and broaden out a little bit to discuss just movements in general and how we make progress in this country, or at least how workers make progress in this country. There's unions and then there's political pressure. Does it come and go in waves, like determining whether, I imagine it does, where sometimes it's the unions that are pushing for more individual contracts? I feel like that's the moment we're in now. And there's sometimes a decade or two decades where the only movement is done by state laws, political pressure. Is that kind of just the waxing and waning of labor movements, Professor?
It is. But, you know, I do homework before I come on your show, and so I wanted to go back and reflect on Chicago really is the capital, the seat of organized labor in the United States of America. We would not have Labor Day, but for something called the Haymarket Riot and the Pullman Strike in 1886 and, I think, 1894. These were violent labor disputes. They involved police. They involved federal troops. They involved the killing of law enforcement officers. A lot of things about it were just awful. However, to your sort of observation or point, Grover Cleveland made He was the president who inaugurated Labor Day. And then the federal government, rather than using federal troops to put down strikers, they then in industries where they had some sort of control, they would enact rules for a 12-hour workday, an 8-hour workday. And one thing that I would like listeners to bear in mind, if there's a signature motto or theme of the labor movement, it is 5-day work week, 8-hour work day. That's what the American version of the labor movement has been about. It's not been about destroying capitalism or so forth. It's time off for a working person and a living wage. So that sort of speaks to when things, as you say, the ebb and flow, there are times that governments are political extensions of, you know, politics and political parties. And so the Democratic Party in the past 50 to 60 years has been very responsive to unions. It's interesting that Republicans have had a good pulse on the American working class in their own way with protectionism.
Right.
So both parties are sort of angling for protecting the worker.
Interesting. Yeah. I've been thinking generally about it after I read an article, and I did not prep for you this for at all, so Professor Lori, so I apologize. But there was an article about Americans and our reluctance to, well, first of all, use the vacation days we have, and a reluctance on companies to offer paid vacation days or paid holidays. And in fact, many American workers don't get paid holidays still and don't get paid vacations. Well, anyways, this whole article went into why the United States is different than Europe in these ways and other countries and other Western developed countries. Why don't we have guaranteed time paid off? And they went through a lot of theories which seemed okay on their face, but maybe didn't play out. Maybe it was our Protestant work ethic, right? Like, that's what drives us much. But when you go to the roots of Protestantism in Middle Europe, they get the time off. So it's not like we have some different brand of Protestantism or hard work or Quakerism than others. This is a really long question. I apologize, Professor Leroy. But the one theory that held water was that, at least in this article, was that because unions have been very strong in the past in the United States, that unions were able to fight individually for time off for their companies. But there's never been that movement expanded to get the political people to write it in for people that aren't protected by unions. And they weren't arguing that unions necessarily did this surreptitiously or they did it, you know, maliciously, but that the strength of the union actually hurt other workers. Do you buy into any of that? And I know I'm just asking you without any time to prepare.
Yeah, sure. Fair question. I'm focusing on something that took place just before the pandemic. California and a few other states enacted paid sick leave laws. And so it's not vacation time, but it speaks to the issue of having income security at a point in time when I'm not physically present at or performing work. And it's where did that come from? It did, in fact, come from unions that said, we can't even get that in our labor agreements. You know, the things that you and I talk about on the show here are these these marquee value kinds of labor disputes, and they tend to be in higher paid industries and so forth. But the typical experience of a union, it's a small bargaining unit, 50 to 100. It's a smaller employer, and the employer says, I can't afford paid sick leave, you guys. I just can't do it, or here's the day. And so the union, if it's politically connected and so forth, it says, okay, you know what, I get it. So we're going to just take this to the city council. We'll get a local ordinance. More likely, we'll take it to the state legislature. But, you know, we've got that. And, you know, along the lines you're talking about, way back when President Clinton came into office, the very first piece of legislation that he signed into law was the Family and Medical Leave Act. So now it's sort of a normal part of our vocabulary. We say FML leave. It's not paid time off. It's
right.
Not. So the best that unions could bargain for externally is what you're talking about, was unpaid leave and hold on to my job. And that is a long haul. And if you talk to people who are trying to get FMLA leave, they often have a hard time getting it. And then employers have their side of the story, which is you don't qualify. But in any event, it's curious to me that more and more people don't use the leave time they have. One more quick thing.
Yep.
The railroad worker almost strike, it almost occurred not because of pay. It was because of paid time off to see a doctor. Isn't that amazing, John, that we came within, you know, a just a really close brush with a crippling national labor strike because workers were not getting paid time off to see a doctor.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm glad they eventually settled that, although not every rail worker agreed with what happened, but the rails kept on rolling. Professor Leroy, as always, we need more time. We just don't have it, my friend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you for giving us some of your time on the Labor Day weekend, as always, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Thank you, John. Have a happy Labor Day.
I will have a happy Labor Day. You too. That's Professor Mike Leroy from the University of Illinois.